We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 173. Back-to-back series wins, Scott, on this road trip. But most importantly, the Yankees are undefeated since I moved to New York City.
Congratulations. That's big news. They're also, since you've moved to New York City, the Bash Brothers of El Kraken and All Rise Aaron Judge have hit four home runs combined. Finally, we're seeing them in one game blow up. So this is all good news. This is all right in line with what I was thinking for September. This team is off to a great, great September, and they need to just continue it on. But hey, man, this was fun to watch, seeing this team finally blow up again. I feel like it was early season dynamics for the Yankees again.
I am here to prove my jinxiness wrong, because there I've been known to jinx certain people. Greg Bird, maybe. I may have jinxed him. I may also tweet out some things from time to time, and the opposite ends up happening. So I'm here in New York to prove that I am not a jinx on the Yankees.
Oh, you're pretty close to a lot of people then, if you do jinx them, to actually retaliate on said jinxes.
Right?
Yeah, you're kind of walking into dangerous territory, if I'm being honest about the situation.
I might have to go out in public like the Bobby Valentine mustache disguise, so no one throws anything at me.
Yeah, no one will recognize you if you put one of those fake mustaches on.
But we're feeling good. We're feeling good about this team right now, and we are also feeling good because we finally have that link live for September 30th.
Yes, finally. My God, it took a long time, but it's finally here. September 30th event, ready to roll. The link is live. It's a shortened link that we use called smarturl.it/gamecrew. That's the name of the link. We will be putting it up all over our social media. We're putting it up tonight, and it will be on the website as well. So you'll be able to get the tickets there. It's a $59 ticket. Again, just so you remember what exactly is going on for this. It is September 30th versus the Blue Jays, which, again, this is going to be a critical series. The way it's lining up is basically it's going to determine whether the Yankees are in the playoffs, home field advantage. It's going to determine something. There's going to be something on the line. We're in section 205 and 206 for this particular game. It's a $59 ticket, gets you the game ticket, and also gets you a Chase for 28 Bronx Pinstripes Crew t-shirt that I designed. I'm going to put that up on social media as well so you can see it. Came out pretty awesome. And then also a pregame party we're going to be doing over at the Bronx Brewery in the South Bronx. And that gets you two free Bronx Banner Ale 16-ounce beers. And then we have deals of $4 16-ounce beers for the rest of the pregame until we all head over. So, look, I'm pumped up. It's a great time of the year. This is the best sports month of the year, in my opinion, with football starting. You got baseball approaching the playoffs. The Yankees are looking very good right now. And we just need to keep it rolling. I think it's going to be a big game. It's going to be a fun game. So go get your tickets. They're $59. Again, below retail value. We made this as affordable as we possibly could so that you guys could all attend. We have, I think, like 500 tickets or so reserved. So let's do it.
I have a good feeling that we're going to be scoreboard watching the Red Sox game and hoping they lose. And something good's going to happen with the Yankees on that day.
I think so, too. I think that's a perfect scenario. You know, we're winning a game on the 30th against the horrid Blue Jays. And the Red Sox losing, taking the AL East crown, no more one-game playoff. I think that's a perfect scenario.
So again, follow us on all social media accounts, at Bronx Pinstripes, at Yankees Podcast. Scott and I will be tweeting it out as well. It'll be all over our Facebook and Instagram page, and you can go directly to BronxPinstripes.com, and you can buy it there. So it'll be very easy to find.
Also, again, just so you are, if you're listening, the link, again, is smarturl.it/gamecrew. So go there and you will be able to buy the tickets. Now, if you're going to another game, what I do suggest is that you go to SeatGeek. Buying tickets to sports events and concerts can be complicated, but there is a better and more simple way to do it, and that's SeatGeek. It's the smartest and easiest way to get tickets to live events. With SeatGeek's seamless mobile experience, you can buy and sell tickets in just two taps. SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There's really nothing like seeing your favorite team, New York Yankees, or a musician in person, and SeatGeek is going to get you closer at a great value. I do have it on my phone. It's the easiest way I have shopped for tickets to regular game events. If there's playoff games, this also is going to be a very good place to get it because you'll see plenty of inventory. You could be anywhere, just a few taps. You can find seats with no problems. I actually use it the last time I was at Yankee Stadium to buy tickets. So again, really, really simple to use. Best of all, the listeners of the Bronx Pinstripe Show get $20 off of their first SeatGeek purchase. So if you have not used the app, use it, get $20 off, and you're able to get either a regular season game for the Yankees or who knows, maybe a playoff game if all goes well. Just download the SeatGeek app and enter the promo code Bronx today. That's promo code Bronx for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase.
$20 off. Think of that as two free beers at the stadium. That's huge.
It's a significant amount.
Before we get into updated standings and playoff picture as we go here, we got to pay a little respects to Gene Stickmichael, who died last week at 79 years old. Scott, I know you're slightly older than me, so you were following the Yankees in that early 90s when he was really running the show as Steinbrenner was suspended from Major League Baseball. But Stickmichael was the number one reason the 90s dynasty happened.
No, it's absolutely right. In 1990, he was hired as the manager of the Yankees and basically took over the baseball operations when Steinbrenner got suspended. And look, this guy, if you listen to anybody, and I'm sure you've already heard a whole bunch of videos and a whole bunch of, you know, you've read the quotes of former players talking about Stickmichael. I think one of the best ones, actually, one of the more, it was very long. He really went into it, I'd say, for about 5 or 6 minutes. It was a video with Michael Kay interviewing Buck Showalter. And if you haven't checked that out, definitely go through the Yes videos and look at that, because, you know, I think Buck Showalter had a very good relationship with Stickmichael when he was the manager. He also gave him an opportunity to become the manager. And so they had a very close relationship, and everybody really just talked so unbelievably glowing about Gene Michael as a person, as a baseball player evaluator, and as the glue of the franchise, really. I mean, he was a big proponent in why the Yankees developed that farm system. And if you haven't noticed lately, Stickmichael was he had come back into the fold a little bit and was more of a consultant with the Yankees. And you can see what's happening right now with the Yankees organization. And I guarantee you, there is that stamp. Gene Michael's stamp is on this current organization right now with the way that it is made up, because it's very, very similar to the way that he built the early 90s Yankees that turned into that Yankees dynasty in the mid to late 90s. So, look, the man was, you can't say enough about what he did for this franchise. I think a lot of people don't realize it. If you are not as up on Stickmichael and don't know enough about him or don't know as much about him, go check it out. Go read a little bit about him, because he really was a phenomenal guy, a phenomenal baseball man, and really just one of the real heart and soul guys of the New York Yankees.
I also think he was, as a general manager, slightly ahead of his time. I was listening to John and Susan over the weekend, and he was preaching on-base percentage in those early 90s teams. And that was sort of before the whole Moneyball on-base percentage wave hit baseball. He brought in Wade Boggs, who single-handedly helped the Yankees become a more patient team. They started to walk more. Think about some of the other guys he traded for. Paul O'Neill. O'Neill had a bad season, bad couple seasons in Cincinnati. Wasn't even playing against left-handed pitching. Stickmichael trades for him, and O'Neill turns into a batting champion and the heart and soul of that Yankees team. He also trades for David Cone. Like, these guys, the Yankees do not win four championships four championships without those players, not even mentioning the core four. And he prevented Steinbrenner from trading guys like Bernie Williams and Andy Pettit and Mariano Rivera, because he knew, we got to build through the farm system. So just an unreal resume.
Yeah, and one of the big takeaways when I was listening to Showalter talk about Stickmichael, and this is something that I love. I mean, like, Stickmichael is like the exact type of baseball guy that I just completely admire. I love the way that they do things, and his, you can't teach this kind of stuff. Like, right now, a lot of guys, you're looking at Billy Beane and these other general managers who are going really, really heavy on the numbers. And Showalter talked about Stickmichael, about what a feel guy he was, and he could see things with his eyeballs that nobody else could see, and that he was, you know, the intuition, the baseball instincts as a player evaluator were just, there was nobody better than Stickmichael. And that's to me what is such a big difference with him and the way that those teams were built, because, you know, he did that obviously by choosing, handpicking players, but you're also seeing that influence on individuals like Brian Cashman. If Brian Cashman were to tell you one of his single biggest influences, maybe he did, I didn't hear him talk much about it, But I guarantee Stick Michael's up there, because the way that you see Cashman going after a trade, similar to what you just talked about with O'Neill, he looks for guys who have superior talent, maybe aren't in a great position.
He buys low,
but knows that there's a lot of talent there and believes that he can, you know, change that and turn it around. And that's exactly what Cashman's doing. That's exactly what Stick Michael did. But he also saw things that people didn't see. So I really hope that intuition has been passed on. It's something I think that's really ingrained in you innately. But if it's something that can be taught, I do believe it has been passed down, because I do think we see it. But yeah, I mean, overall, just like what a phenomenal baseball guy.
Yeah, meant so much to the both of our favorite Yankees teams and a lot of people listening favorite Yankees teams. It just does not happen. The Yankees are not what they are today. They are not what they were for the last 30 years without Stick Michael. So, yeah, definitely good to see everyone talking about him over the last week. As we move, though, to the final stretch here, 20 games remaining. The Yankees only have one off day. So it is a tough climb for the Yankees these next 20 games. They trail the Red Sox by 3.5 in the AL East after the Yankees won today against Texas and the Red Sox lost. But it's 3 in the loss column. So when you break it down by weeks, the Yankees essentially have 3 weeks of baseball left. They're going to need to gain a game on the Red Sox each week for it to happen. And remember, they only have to tie. We talked about that last week. They only have to tie Boston to win the division.
Yeah, that's why that last series was so important, because they were able to get the season series edge on the Red Sox. Therefore, if there is a tie, they have the tiebreaker. That's big. I mean, that's huge when you're talking about these very, very tightly contested divisions and wild card situations. Look, the Yankees are playing well right now. Their bats are on fire. I mean, for the most part, they're hitting well. We saw again today. We'll talk about Sunday's game, but you're seeing Sanchez and Judge. I mean, that are playing well at the same time. And again, we've been waiting for that for a long time. And now it looks like we're maybe on the cusp of seeing it, because it does look like Judge is starting to turn a corner again and get back to, you know, I'm not going to say what he was early in the season, because I don't think he'll ever get back to that.
But probably have to throw that out the window. Like, yeah, that's not what he is. We may never see that again. It was historic. But he can be 75% of that and still be an absolute beast.
Absolutely. And that's the beauty of it, because he's got so many other guys around him right now that are back and healthy that he doesn't need to be that guy. He doesn't need to be a guy that was pressing. And, you know, who knows? Maybe that goes into it as well from a lot of his struggles. There were a lot of guys that were hurt around him. He almost had to carry the team for a while and it just wasn't happening. And, you know, maybe he was pressing too hard and it got him into bad funks. I don't know what it is. I don't think anybody really does. Maybe we'll find out after the season that he was injured. But at the same time, now we're seeing so many other guys that are contributing on such a big level. Castro back, Didi on freaking fire still. I mean, Didi probably, you know, wire to wire, having the best year of anybody on the team. I mean, the guy has been just absolutely consistent all year long.
Didi may have turned into their best all-around player. I don't think it's that much of an exaggeration.
No, you could absolutely make a case. When you're looking at a total baseball player, the guy does everything. He really does. And he's a phenomenal off the field. He's good on the field. He plays defense. He hits for average. He hits power. He's hitting in the clutch. I mean, yeah, he is a phenomenal player.
Hey, just out of curiosity, what's Shane Green up to these days?
I don't know. He did have a save, I think, against the Yankees at one of those games right before the brawl, or might have been after the brawl. I don't know.
But like maybe
he's with the lowly Tigers.
Maybe the most lopsided trade in Yankees history. Unbelievable.
Yeah, I like what we've done with the Tigers. We've gotten Chad Green from the Tigers as well. You know, this has been good dealings. I think we should do more deals with the Tigers and try to take all their good players.
So even if the Yankees do not get that division, they still have a hearty lead over the Twins right now, 3.5 up on the Twins, and they play the Twins in a couple weeks, September 18th, 19th, and 20th. They play the Twins at Yankee Stadium. They can pretty much solidify their wild card number one standing with a series win against Minnesota that series.
Yeah, it's a huge series, and you know damn well that Minnesota's going to be coming geared up, ready for that series, because this is a team that was dead in the, you know, they were dead in the water. They were in the weeds. They had sold at the trade deadline. And then all of a sudden they're like, wait, why are you guys selling? We're still here, which is crazy. I've never seen that happen that I can remember, at least a team that gave up and sold and then all of a sudden won a whole bunch in a row and was right back in the fold. But that team, their offense has been playing well. They score some runs. They got a lot of young players, and who knows? It's not the same Twins team that we're used to just whooping up on.
So check this out. I got I was on my fun employment week. I was just going through some email, and I saw a ticket promotion from the Yankees for that Minnesota series. And I'm thinking to myself, wow, they're giving away tickets to this series because that's going to be a big series. So I clicked on it. I found $9 tickets for that Tuesday game against the Twins.
It's a good deal. That's a very good deal.
Damn good deal. Just get me in the ballpark. The crowd should be fired up that night.
Yeah, absolutely. You could go walk around. It doesn't even matter where you are anymore because you could just go walk in and hang out in center field. It's going to be a big series. There's no doubt about it. And this is not a series that I know the Yankees aren't going to be taking it lightly because it's going to have major implications at that point. And the Twins know that. They know what's at stake. So they're going to be coming in ready to pounce on the Yankees pitching.
Another big series, as we're talking, was the series win against Baltimore last week. It was the first series win the Yankees have had at Camden Yards since September of 2013. Guys like Chris Stewart and Lyle Overbay and Ichiro and Travis Hafner were playing for the Yankees in 2013, and that's the last time they beat the Orioles at Camden Yards. Camden Yards was a place that used to be called Yankee Stadium South. We owned that joint.
Yeah, I don't know why they struggle to play there so badly, because even when they've lost, they're still like 80% Yankee fans. I mean, the Yankees chants during that game and that series this past week in Baltimore were unbelievably loud, and probably because there's not very many people there in the first place. So if you can get a good contingent of Yankees fans yelling, and we're usually louder, that you can hear it more on the cameras, but it was pretty significant. And that's every time I've ever been to Camden Yards, and I've been there a bunch of times. It's always been almost as many Yankee fans as there are Orioles fans. It's an embarrassment.
Yeah, four straight years of losing at Camden Yards. But if you want to point to one thing, the Yankees' record against Baltimore might be one of the biggest reasons they haven't made the playoffs the last couple years.
Yeah, we talk about the playing the Red Sox 19-20, whatever, however many times in a season. I mean, we're playing all these guys that many times. And the Orioles, if you haven't won a series in Camden Yards, half those games are going to be away at their park. So that's a long time to not win a series against a division opponent.
So it was good. And it was also good because the Yankees finally got some run support for Sonny Gray. They won 9-1. Sonny Gray, it was a weird kind of game, though, because the Yankees took a big lead. Gray was cruising for a while and then got into some trouble. So what happened was in the sixth inning, the Yankees were, I think, leading 7-1 at this point. They got into a little bit of a jam, and Joe brings in Chad Green. Chad Green hadn't pitched since Monday. So I understand he probably didn't want Green sitting too long, but Green is one of our biggest weapons in the bullpen. But he brings him in a blowout game. If he wants to just get the one out with Green to put out the fire, I totally understand that. But he left Green out there again for the seventh inning, pretty much eliminating him from Friday's game. Then he goes to Tommy Kahnle. The Yankees are winning by 8 runs at that point. He goes to Tommy Kahnle in the eighth inning. You're telling me you can't put out Ben Heller, Caleb Smith, or Brian Mitchell to get 3 outs or 6 outs in an 8-run ball game? That's an embarrassment. There's no reason you should have to go to Tommy Kahnle in a blowout.
Yeah, Girardi, again, still goes to this notion that if he hasn't pitched in a certain day, it doesn't matter the situation or whatever it is, he'll use a guy, one of his big guys. I don't know if he thinks that he's got all the amount of arms that he has that he can actually go out and spend a couple of them and still be fine, because it's just not the case, because it seems like every week one or two of these guys having a bad week and they're just not effective. So you need every single one of these guys. I don't agree with Chad Green for the second inning. I agree with you in the sense that, like, hey, you want to put out a fire? That's the guy that we said that he was their fire extinguisher. He's their Andrew Miller right now, and that's fine. You want to make sure that doesn't lead into something else that inning? Okay. Why burn him for the next? Because it was a joke. Because, again, granted, it was earlier in the game. It was the fourth inning, but he brought in Chad Green in a lopsided game again. So, it continues to be head scratching the way he used these relievers.
It is, because we needed Chad Green on Friday night. That was the perfect Chad Green game after Tanaka struggled to bring in Green and keep it a close game. Instead, we had to go to crappier relievers, and they gave up 11 runs.
What are you gonna do? I mean, this is
no, what do you mean? You can't just say what are you gonna do? This is a huge That's a huge decision as we're approaching 20 games left in the season.
I am going to say, what are you going to do? Because we've been bitching about this for freaking 3 years since we've been on the show. This is exactly what Girardi does. He does it every freaking year. It doesn't matter who it is, what the situation is. He's going to do something ridiculous with the bullpen. He's going to bring in Joe Blyer in the eighth inning against Toronto.
Dickie Blyer. Richie
against
Blyer.
Toronto in a tie game in the last week, or whoever the hell it was. Chad Pender, Brendan Pinder. One of the guys from the Scranton Shuttle in a massive game.
It's Mad
this
Libs.
This is what Girardi does.
It's like Mad Libs. Insert first, insert last name for the Scranton Shuttle. You're pretty much going to hit on a Yankee reliever over the last few years.
It's utterly ridiculous.
And his argument is that, oh, well, Green hadn't pitched since Monday. We want to keep him fresh. We don't want to burn out certain guys. So that's why he went to him, because he's on a rotation. Each guy is going to pitch so that they're all fresh down the stretch. But I understand that logic. But when you basically are not sacrificing, because he didn't know how the Friday game was going to go. But it was a major decision. A big reason the Yankees lost on Friday night was because of the way Girardi used the bullpen on Thursday. It wasn't the biggest, because Tanaka stunk, but a big reason is because he couldn't go to Chad Green for a multi-inning appearance to shut down the Rangers hitters.
Look, you can talk about it all day long, but this is what Girardi does. If a guy needs work, Girardi's going to get him work. It doesn't matter what the situation is. It just doesn't. I mean, Betances got work today in a 13-6 game, I think it was, or 14-6 game. You're looking at Dellin Betances pitch because he hadn't pitched in a while. And this is a guy that they want to get in there so that he can get enough repetition in there so that he can control his fastball. Granted, it didn't work. He really wasn't controlling his fastball well. And it still happens. It's going to continue to happen. This is what Girardi is. This is what he does. It's not a mystery any longer. I don't know what to say any longer than this is going to be a factor.
Yes.
And thankfully, we have six guys who can close games. Thankfully.
What did you think was going on with Tanaka on Friday night? Because it was the worst he's looked in the second half so far.
Yeah, I thought, you know, after that first home run, or actually before that first home run, I saw the writing on the wall almost. Like, you could see his body language. It just wasn't in a good place. I don't know what his deal was, but he just didn't have it at all. And it was written all over him. I mean,
you know what's frustrating about that is that when Tanaka doesn't have it, he can't battle. He doesn't battle in games.
I mean, he really didn't have it. It was pretty unbelievable how bad he was in leaving balls over the plate.
Seven earned runs, though.
You just knew damn well that it was going to happen. Look, I'm not getting too upset about Tanaka's one bad start, because he's been phenomenal in the second half. So chalk it up to a bad start. Hopefully he can rebound and get back on there. But I definitely can't be too disappointed with one bad start in the second half so far.
No, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, like you said, he's been great in the second half. I just am disappointed, and I've always felt this way about Tanaka, and it's always the reason I said he wasn't an ace, is because if he doesn't have his A game, he's going to get hit. And I'm sorry, if you're an ace pitcher, you're going to have days where you go out and battle. I believe David Cohn has talked about, like, 20% of the time you'll go out there and everything is just easy. You're going to mow the other team down because you got your good fastball, your good slider, your good splitter, and when you're that talented, it's just going to be easy for you. But 80% of the time, obviously on a sliding scale, you're not going to have something working, and you have to figure out how to beat the other team. You have to outthink them. You have to outwork them.
Then let me ask you a giant question that's going to hopefully just ease your mind and take your – stop worrying about this so much. Who is calling him an ace anymore?
No, I'm not saying they are.
That's not him anymore.
I agree. I'm saying this has always been my feelings toward Tanaka. And he's been a great pitcher in the second half. And I hope he continues to be a great pitcher down the stretch for the Yankees, because if he can help the Yankees make the playoffs and make a deep run, then fine, I'm all for it. But when you see him go out and lay an egg in a game like this, when he doesn't have his stuff and he's not battling and he has that stupid look, that blank look on his face where he doesn't know what's going wrong, it's just very annoying to look at.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm going to focus on his good stuff, because I think one bad start right now, he needs to rebound. We just need to see that he doesn't get back into some kind of a mental state, because I do believe that when he was going badly, when things were not going right, a lot of it was between his ears, and he was not executing pitches. So let's just really, really, really hope, knocking on wood, that this doesn't start anything trending in the bad direction, because that right now would be catastrophic, in all honesty, because we need him to close this, to close the season out. And then again, if the Yankees keep going the way that they are and they do enter the playoffs, the Yankees are going to need him to pitch and pitch well.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to take a glass half full approach on this Tanaka start, you can say, well, he gave up a lot of bleeders that went through the infield, a lot of balls. Even one of the doubles that Elvis Andrews hit was a chopper to third base, and it just chopped over Todd Frazier's head down the left field line. So it's not like he was giving up all rockets. He did get hit hard on some occasions. He also threw two wild pitches, so he just had zero. He had zero on the mound. That's the result we saw. But it was still a game the Yankees were in, because they had a 5-1 lead early. So Tanaka doesn't have it. If you could have gone, again, going back to the Chad Green decision, if you, instead of going to Canley with runners on base, maybe you bring in Chad Green, or you bring in David Robertson, who is Mr. Houdini himself, maybe you get out of it and it's a 5-5 game or a 6-5 game, and we're not talking about a blowout for Texas.
No, it's true. I think that's where the decision really does come into play, because Chad Green can go multiple innings, and even if he had just come in on the game before and pitched, got out of that one inning so that he is putting out that fire, quote unquote, and he's still available then the next day. So big decision right there. I don't know why he had to try it out for that next inning. That's, to me, on Girardi. I mean, I think Girardi does take certain losses on the season. Like, you could chalk up certain losses. I'm not giving this one to him. I think there's a contributing factor in it, but there's just sometimes there's no reason for it. And even if you're trying to get work, like, you come in for the game, then throw a bullpen session right after that. You know what I mean? Like, you don't need to come back in after sitting down for another half inning and throwing another inning when there's no reason for you to be in the game.
It's pretty clear, though, what they're doing with Chad Green. They use him for multiple innings, and then he sits the next day. It's pretty clear that's his schedule.
Right, but at the same time, we need him to be a guy that's available more often down the stretch. You can't just have him come in for multiple innings, because if the Yankees are in all these close games towards the end, the wild card's coming down to one or two games, the division's coming down to one or two games, and you threw Chad Green the day before for an inning and a third, and you had to trot him back out there, and then he's not available because you threw him for that second inning in a game that's not needed him to be in, then that's unacceptable. Like, this guy has to be not on a schedule. He has to be per situations and be available a lot more often, because they're going to need him.
It's tough. It's tough to break that routine that Girardi has.
Yeah, Girardi's all about his routines. He's a
I think we're pretty
guy.
Fair on Girardi. When you take like a bird's eye view, I think you and I are pretty fair on Girardi. We criticize him, certainly, but there's some people who kill him for absolutely everything. They would kill him for Aaron Judge struggling, not to mention all the bullpen issues. Like, they took it too far, but I think this is a fair criticism. I think we're pretty fair on Girardi. One other thing I want to mention before we move on to the good Yankee games this weekend is that Romine's suspension was reduced from 2 games down to 1 game. He served it on Friday night. The more I was thinking about it on Friday, it's kind of bullshit that he even got 1 game. He was defending himself. So you're saying that he should have just taken punches from Miggy and gotten his ass kicked, and then that's how he should have handled that situation? So the more I thought about it, I thought it was bullshit.
Yeah, I don't know if they're looking at that situation and seeing him as also, one of the two guys that was the beginning of it, because they were definitely talking back and forth. Then instigator. He whipped off his mask. Yeah, that could have been an instigation thing. Who knows? It's a he said at that point on who started it. Maybe the umpire overheard certain things and was able to relay that information. I don't know. But at the same time, 1 game in the grand scheme of things, not that big of a deal. But if it was based on the punches thrown, yeah, he's defending himself. The guy should be able to defend himself. And honestly, he was just ducking and ducking and ducking and then wrapped up. He wasn't really throwing punches. He was he just put a pretty unbelievable wrestling move on Miggy. And was ducking, dodging shots the entire time. I mean, it was great. Didn't land one blow.
I know it's kind of early to say, but we talked about when that brawl happened, maybe this is going to light a fire under the Yankees. And since that day, they've been playing better baseball.
There's no doubt. They lost the game after that. People overreacted, saying, what was the reason for it? Where's the spark? Look at what this team is doing now. This team is going out, winning series like they did in the beginning of the year. People are getting healthy. Everybody's back. The band's back together. The boys are playing like they used to. The pitching is actually coming together. Severino is dominating
again.
And this is just good stuff, man. Like I do believe those types of moments, especially when you're adding a bunch of guys via trade, and then you have like significant September call-ups. Like these guys are significant players and contributors to this team. That type of situation can absolutely gel a much bigger roster very quickly.
Yeah, hell yeah. Look at one of the September call-ups. Tyler Austin with one of the biggest hits this weekend to give the Yankees a lead in the ninth inning on Saturday. So these September call-ups aren't just there for aesthetic purposes. They're not just checking boxes. They're all, a lot of them are contributing.
Well, and then in the past, you know, a lot of them would just be up there for a pinch runner or, you know, what was that guy's name? Noel. He was literally their pinch runner. I mean, you have guys that would come up
Homer
to fill
Bush,
those spots.
The Homer Bush role.
And they, but now they have guys who are legitimately up because they can contribute. It's crazy how deep they are. They're probably deeper than any team on the, if you look at roster in the AL, as far as offensively positioned player, they've got to be either deeper or right there with anybody because their AAA, their farm system is so good and so highly ranked that it's impressive to see. So when you have a situation like that fight, and you get all these new guys, and then you got Holiday coming back up, and Cashier coming back up, and you know, all the with Todd Frazier in, and D-Rob, and all these kids all coming in to gel together. What's better than a fight? There's nothing better than that.
As you mentioned a second ago, Severino dominant once again, 10 strikeouts in 7 innings. His ERA is now under 3 to 2.96. We got into depth last Monday about how filthy Severino has been. So if you didn't hear that, go back and listen to it. But I don't know what else there is to say other than this is the pitcher we were all crossing our fingers for.
You know, I love it. He had a quote the other day, too. He was talking about his work ethic and how he wanted to get back up. He said, "That's why I worked hard in the offseason to prove the Yankees and to the fans that I can be a starter." I love that. I love that he took that chip and realized what he was supposed to be to this Yankees organization. He was supposed to be the next frontline Yankees pitcher, and he just wasn't able to put it together. We all know what he had in the bullpen. The guy was dominant in the bullpen, and he worked his ass off. He worked with Pedro Martinez. Thank you, Pedro. And, you know, has developed the confidence and the execution on these secondary pitches. And it's just, you see him every single time he trots out there, just a little bit more confidence, a little bit more confidence. And that hose in the seventh and eighth inning is still there. I mean, he's still throwing 99 miles an hour in the late in games and then still giving you a devastating changeup slider. The guy's phenomenal right now. And the confidence level is what's putting him over the top.
If you put yourself in the shoes of like a 21, 22, 23-year-old kid, you struggle as a starter, but then they throw you in the bullpen and you're very good in the bullpen. It would be so easy to just say, okay, I'm going to be a relief pitcher. This is where I'm having success. But that's not what he did. So I give him a lot of credit for that, for going out and still trying to be the starter. Because a lot of times we see failed starters just say, yep, I guess I'm a bullpen guy now.
Well, at the same time, I think we have to give some credit to the Yankees organization because we've seen them do that in the past and then just say that, okay, now you're a bullpen guy and have given up on that guy. I think they realize, given the landscape of their minor leagues, the pitching and where they were going into next year with the free agents, with potentially Tanaka opting out, they really needed to give this guy, you know, multiple opportunities to go out and to earn that spot and to actually take that next step as a starter. So I do give this the credit to the Yankees brass for sticking with him as long as they did, because they could have gone and said, okay, he's not a starter, he is a reliever now. But we're seeing somewhere, I mean, obviously not as prolific of a prospect, but when Chad Green came over, they had him in both roles. The whole Jabba Phil Hughes thing, he was going back and forth, and we're seeing just the opposite, where Chad Green is now really, I think, has found his home in the bullpen, whereas Severino, we still thought, had that extra pitch or had that extra that stuff to really make it as a starter. So, you know, it's a new leaf almost for the Yankees organization to stick with a guy for that long and to to give him that confidence. So I think that's big too.
That'll actually be interesting to watch in the offseason how they approach Chad Green next year, because you're right, he was a starter. Do they want to try him back in the starting rotation given all the success he's had this year in the bullpen? I mean, what is it, close to 100 strikeouts and 63 innings pitched? It's just ridiculous numbers from Chad Green. Do they, if they lose Sabathia in the offseason and Tanaka somehow opts out at this point and then they're down to just Severino, Sonny Gray, and Montgomery, do they say, hey, we need to give Chad Green a start?
You know, it's possible. I don't think anything's out of the realm of possibilities. I do believe that they're very confident in him right now and his role in the bullpen. But at the same time, this guy was a starter. He knows what it's like to be a starter. He's got the confidence in his stuff. And I think that's what's so important. I mean, if you talk to some of the guys in the bullpen, they're talking about Chad Green having the best stuff of any of those guys out there. That's saying something when you're looking at Patances and D-Rob and Chapman and Tommy Canley. Like, these are guys that have, you know, plus stuff. And they're saying that Chad Green probably has the best movement, the best fastball, the best stuff of any of them.
Fastball. So
it's definitely one of those situations that could develop and he could turn into another, at least potential starter. You never know. But I think it does depend on what happens with Tanaka, with, you know, bringing back CeCe on a friendly 1-year deal. I think we'll have to see what happens, but I think it's not out of the realm of possibility.
Yeah, Chad Green's fastball looks like it hurts the batter to hit it.
Yeah, and it's so easy out of his hand. It's like, it's one of those effortless. They talk about easy power, and with an offense with Aaron Judge, and you're looking at Chad Green, he just doesn't look like he's throwing very hard. And he's, you know, notching it up to 9,900 miles an hour with some solid movement. I mean, the guy's got a phenomenal fastball.
Yeah. Montgomery struggled. We're talking about another young starter, Jordan Montgomery. He struggled since they called him back up. Do you equate his struggles to, he's a rookie, he's pitching longer this season than he ever has before, this is just rookie struggles? Or is it that they got him out of his rhythm? They shut him down for a little while, then they brought him back because of injury. Then he was on like 6 and 7 days rest. So he's just all out of whack.
You know, when you look at a guy like Montgomery and kind of the rise he had pretty much out of nowhere, when nobody really thought that fifth starter spot was even you know, his for the taking. I mean, he wasn't really in the early conversations of who was going to be that fifth starter. And when he came out and did that and started pitching really well, you're starting to see this guy, like, I think he had one of the lowest ERAs of rookies, right, in the first half. I mean, he was one of the better first half lefties in baseball, not just rookies, but left-handed pitchers. I think there's a multiple things going on with this. I mean, one, you're getting a book on him now. I think guys have seen enough of Jordan Montgomery where the book is out on him as well. And it's kind of his turn now to make the adjustment to the league, because you're seeing, obviously, in the American League with that extra batter, you're seeing a lot more power numbers. You're seeing a lot better hitters, and you're seeing a full season of tape now on a guy. And he's faced many of these guys multiple times. So I think it's very normal for a rookie to kind of hit a skid or hit a wall even in their first year against like high level opponents like this. So I think next year is just his turn to make that adjustment.
I totally agree with you. I'm not super worried about Montgomery at this point. As you said at the top of the show, Sanchez 2 homers, Judge 2 homers. So Sanchez is now up to 30 on the season. Judge is up to 41. Sanchez missed a whole month of the season, and he's got 30 as a catcher. That's ridiculous. Judge, 41 home runs, 106 walks as a rookie. So just when you take a step back and look at both of their production, they actually outproduced what we were even thinking they would at the beginning of the season, and you and I were tempering expectations for Gary Sanchez, but he's pretty much lived up to them. Judge's numbers look ridiculous, and they are ridiculous. It's just the fact that 90% of it came in the first half of the season. So you kind of say it's been two separate seasons for Judge. But there was a conversation on the Yes Network today on the broadcast that said, what would you have taken for Aaron Judge at the beginning of the season? And I think you and I talked about 25 homers, 30 homers if he has a really good season, 250 to 260 hitter is what we were kind of would consider a great season for Judge this year. Am I right?
Yeah, I think that we certainly didn't think the batting average would be where it was. And I mean, nobody thought it was going to be 330 and a triple crown worthy of what he had at the beginning of the season. Where is he now? Like 280? He's right around 280.
277, I think.
So he's going to probably end the season. I'm still thinking he's going to be closer to 265, 270, right around that 270 mark. And to me, that's a very good batting average for Aaron Judge. If he can have a career batting average of 270 to 280, I think that's phenomenal. He's going to have the power. Again, I go back to this. I know he's a Hall of Famer, but I'm comparing him in the numbers wise to Dave Winfield. That was my early comparison to him. You look at Dave Winfield, he was a 280 hitter. I think he hit for a little bit more average. But if Aaron Judge can somehow find that happy medium of 330 and 210 or whatever the hell he's been hitting, and can actually, you know, become that 275, 280 hitter, I think you're looking at like unbelievable numbers. But yeah, at the beginning of the season, I for sure thought his strikeout numbers would be way up, which they are now because they've kind of come back to where we thought they'd be. But the batting average, I thought for sure would be lower.
Exactly like you said, you have to find a happy medium. If he just hit 277 from day one of the season and was hovering around there the whole season with the 40 homers, we would say, oh my God, this is amazing. He's everything we could have hoped for and more. But it's just the fact that he hit 330 and then 190 in the second half. You can't deal with that kind of juxtaposition.
No, that's the thing. He's got to be more consistent. And I think I know he's a smart enough baseball player and a smart enough guy to figure it out at some point and to find that happy medium. You know, if we do find out later in the season or in the offseason at some point that left shoulder was nagging him for a while, I mean, maybe that would make a lot of sense, because the guy that we saw, just the approach-wise, was a totally different guy in the first half. And I think if he can go back to that and start hitting the ball the other way and really start, you know, having that same approach and going the other way with the ball and the power just being there when it is, because he was making so many mistakes early in the season and the ball was going out because he was making so much more contact.
Yep.
I think if he goes back to that approach, now granted, I don't think he could do it at such a high rate, but if he goes back to that approach and that mentality, I think he can absolutely be in the 270, 280, in that range, because, you know, he's going to make mistakes that are going to go out of the ballpark.
And he still frustrates me at times, because there was a pitch, there was an at-bat on Friday night. It was a 3-2 count to him, and he took a fastball right down the middle. I don't know what you're looking for 3-2, but if you got a fastball down the middle, you got to be swinging.
Yeah, he's the whole approach has just been different from him in the second half than it was in the first half. I mean, he early in the season, he wasn't looking at those pitches. He was swinging at them. He was making people pay if they put the ball around the plate. Now, obviously, you're seeing the adjustments from the pitching staffs on the second half, and you're seeing a ton of breaking balls to the outside corner. You're seeing fastballs to the outside corner. Everything is away. You're seeing everything away. But because of the way his approach is, you know, he's coming off of that ball and he's swinging and missing like he did that second half of 2016. And, you know, he just needs to, I don't know, to me, if I was his batting coach, I would just stay closed, and the power's going to be there. Look at Giancarlo Stanton. It's a very similar stance than what Judge had in the first half. He's all closed, and the power is there because they're massive human beings.
Yeah, just look at the ballpark you're playing in. Go to right field. It's right there. Flip your wrist, and it's over. It's in the short porch.
No doubt.
It was his first multi-homer game since June 11th, which was the day after our June 10th event against Baltimore. That was the one where he hit it 496 feet or whatever it was.
Yeah, phenomenal stuff, man. Look, it's been a long time since he's had those the multi-game home run, which if you had asked me then if that would happen, I mean, I would have probably bet my entire life on that it would happen probably within the next week, maybe right. 2 weeks, and I would not be sitting here right now.
The Yankees, as I'm treading lightly on this, because Hurricane Irma, what it's doing to Florida is absolutely horrendous, and what it did to the Caribbean and everything, it's just the videos that I saw, one video from the Bahamas where it like sucked water out of like this dock area. There was just no more water left. So I don't know what the hell's going on down there. It's terrible. But the Yankees are actually catching a break because they're playing in New York. It cuts their road trip down. They can go home and play the Rays at Citi Field. It's basically going to be a home game for the Yankees.
Yeah, it's an interesting decision where they put the game. It's we appreciate it, Major League Baseball. It's not an ideal situation. Obviously, with Tampa is going to be getting hit in the next few hours for when we're recording this. The storm looks really bad, and just hopefully everybody in Tampa stays safe. That's the main priority, but the Yankees are catching a break as far as the baseball, and they have a game in New York. It's in Citi Field, which will be very weird, but it's a different situation. I got an email from I get emails from the Yankees as far as like their press stuff, and it's interesting because all the press that are going to Citi Field can't the Yankee credentials do nothing for them. It's only the Mets credentials. So everybody has to go and reapply for Mets credentials basically to get into Citi Field. It's an interesting scenario.
It's kind of funny. I have as you know, you've met him, my buddy down in the Tampa area. I texted him. I said, stay safe during all this. Are you leaving? And he said, yeah, I'm going to a friend's house. It's on higher ground and I'm bringing my gun. I'm like, what the hell are you going to do? Shoot the damn hurricane? He goes, no, it's for the alligators. So I'm like, okay, yeah, you're in some shit.
Ooh. That's I didn't even think about that. I was thinking about that actually for when Houston, they were talking about the amount of like there's snakes and I guess alligators, and The other bad thing about these places that flood, and people don't think about this as much, but the mosquitoes, like,
oh God.
Afterwards, I mean, especially with like Zika virus down there, like that's scary. All those mosquitoes, that's where they breed, is in standing water. So flood waters, I can't even imagine what it's going to be like down there. So man, I hope everybody down there, especially a bunch of the people that we've met.
Yeah.
Tommy, yeah, stay Tommy. Safe, brother.
Our guy Tommy down in Tampa. Everyone, I know we have a lot of listeners in the Florida area. So, guys, in all seriousness, stay safe. Hopefully, you're listening to this podcast somewhere in the north, so you're away from all the trouble. Before we get into mailbags, fun stuff from the Yankees minor league system. Scranton's going to their second straight AAA championship. Trenton is also in the championship for the second straight year. And I know Tampa, they ended up losing their championship, but they were in it again. So the Yankees minor league system doing work.
Yo, embarrassment of riches in championships. And talk about like phenomenal experience for all of these guys going in and playing very meaningful games. We talked about in the offseason about how the guys that are going to be called up to the major leagues this year, you know, with the likes of Sanchez and Judge and Austin and all these guys that play, Ref Snyder pouring my beer out. What all these guys are playing together in the minor leagues in meaningful games. And while people may not think that the AAA championship or a AA championship means jack shit, and you know, in the grand scheme of things, maybe it doesn't. It does for them when they're playing in it. But what I'm saying is these guys are going in meaningful games, they're going to battle in playoff games, and at that moment, that's their biggest game. So they're building this bond of winning all the way in the minor leagues. It's huge.
That's what Clint Frazier said when we talked to him back in November. He said, yeah, I mean, it was fun. It was a fun experience. I get traded over and we're playing in meaningful games, but we're playing together and there's camaraderie as you're playing into a championship. It doesn't matter what level you are, you're trying to beat your opponent. So he didn't downplay it at all.
Yeah, no, and I think it's such a massive thing. I think he's actually in Trenton, isn't he? Right now playing with them. So
he is, yeah.
But nice little boost for the Thunder.
Yeah, the opponents for the Thunder down in AA must be like, are you freaking kidding me?
Yeah, no ringers. This is
bringing in a ringer. Yeah. It's like when Matt Holliday was down in Tampa. I think that was their playoff run too.
But you know, it really can't be understated, I think, for what these guys are developing in the minor leagues together, because a lot of them, while spots are becoming a lot fewer now in the majors because they're filling up very quickly. But these guys all have that winning attitude, and I love it. I love that it's an absolute cultural thing throughout the minor league system of the New York Yankees winning championships. That's awesome.
We also want to remind you guys to rate and review the podcast in iTunes. And I think coming up soon, Scott and I have been sort of mulling it over. We're going to do something with the reviews. If you write a funny review or a review that is particularly nice to one of us, maybe we'll even read it on the podcast. But if you write a good review, we might bring them and give you a shout out on the podcast. So go take a minute, pause the show right now, give us a 5-star rating and review. We really appreciate it. Also, submit mailbag questions at bronxpinstripes.com/podcast and call the voicemail line 646-480-0342. All right, let's get to mailbags. The first one is from Owen. And he says, I know that it's kind of early, but if the Yankees do make it to a 7-game series and Masahiro Tanaka is still hot, do you think that they would try to pitch him on short day's rest?
Jeez. No, I don't think they'll need to in a 7-game series and short day rest. So I think they have opportunities for starters. They have situations where they're not going to need to do that.
No, 100%.
They have Sonny Gray, they have Severino, and they believe in CeCe. So I don't think that's a thing. It's not a situation where you need to be throwing a guy like Tanaka. And that would say that Tanaka's throwing the first game, right? Or maybe even the second game if it were to go down.
No, second game and it goes to 7 games. Because what I think Owen is kind of calling back to is the 2009 playoffs. You remember the Yankees went with a 3-man rotation, Sabathia, Burnett, and Pettit. They all pitched on short day's rest every time out.
And that happens quite often, though. I mean, that you'll see that in the playoffs because you don't have 4 reliable starters most of the time. But the Yankees have confidence in 4 guys. That is a huge difference. Not to mention, they have a beast of a bullpen with guys who could go multiple innings. We were just talking about Chad Green and how he could go multiple innings. I mean, they have confidence in some of these guys in the bullpen to actually go in and pitch significant time. So I don't think that it would come down to it. Now, if they were put in a position where, God forbid, there was an injury and that was their best situation, then, yeah, they might do it. I think that they will at some point, if that's the case, they're not going to look at the numbers, because if you do look at the numbers in the entire scheme of things, we looked at this a few weeks ago with Tanaka on short rest and Tanaka on regular rest. It's just, they're not as different as you think they are. So I do think that they would go to it if they were pigeonholed and put in a situation that they would need to.
The only pitcher I foresee them pitching on short days rest is Severino. Say you're in a 5-game series and you're down 2-1 and it's game 4 and you need to win or you're going home. I could see them maybe going to Severino instead of somebody else.
Yeah, but then you're also going to a guy who hasn't really done it before also, and
he's your guy.
I get he's your guy, but you're also in a position where, look, this is way down the road. I can't believe we're even talking about this, but I feel weird talking about this, especially with you, Mr.
You feel
Jinx.
Dirty? You feel a little dirty?
Yeah, I do. I don't feel right. But I guarantee there will be some hesitance throwing Severino on short rest. I guarantee that will be a thing.
Well, like you said, it's most likely not going to be an issue because they have 4 starters they believe in.
Yes. Knocking on wood, hopefully everybody's healthy and that we get to that position and we can have that problem.
All right, what's the next mailbag?
Next one is from Andre. He said, I still cannot believe that Joe used Chad Green during 2 blowout games. As he called him earlier, he is a weapon, probably the most important weapon in the bullpen. Save him for the important games, not the blowouts. It is September. You can have as many arms in the bullpen as you want. That's the other thing. There are a million guys because of September call-ups. You can add more guys. Arms are not a problem at this point.
Yeah, and we really touched on this earlier. I know a lot of people were pissed off, and Andre, so I wanted to let him get his little rant and vent out there. But Girardi did refer to Chad Green as the quote-unquote weapon, which I think you can't really consider a guy a weapon if you're not willing to use him at any day, right? If a team doesn't have to worry about him because he pitched the day before and they know he's not going to be out there today, it's not really a weapon.
Yeah, if it's predictable like that, then yes, I agree with that. But I think more into the terms he was talking about a weapon is in the sense that you can use them at any point in a given game. Not just the ninth inning guy, not just an eighth inning guy, but he could come in the fourth inning in a situation where maybe the game could, you know, maybe Jordan Montgomery could let them back in a game with a big home run, and that's just not going to happen because Chad Green's going to come in and shut the door.
The fun thing about how Francona used Miller last year in the playoffs is that teams were like, anytime after the 5th inning, they would look out to the bullpen and it's like, oh crap, is Andrew Miller warming up? So that's kind of in the mind of the other team's heads. And that is important. That cannot be understated. That was always a factor in the 90s when the Yankees had Rivera. Teams knew they had to play an 8-inning game, sometimes even a 7-inning game against the Yankees.
Yeah, the thing is, though, is that, one, first of all, we're talking about Andrew Miller, who's probably one of the top 3 best relievers in baseball. And this guy has done this in the past where he could come in and throw multiple innings with no problems. He's proven that before. So he's got more of a track record. He's got more of that fear factor, if you will, of him showing up in the bullpen in the middle of a 5th and 6th inning, because he could go 3 innings. You don't know. They'll use him for whatever they want to, especially late in the season. Andrew Miller's like, whatever, throw me for 5 innings. I'll do it. No problem. It doesn't matter.
You want me to start and close?
Yeah,
I'll do it.
He's just that guy. He's that kind of guy. He talks about that too. So I think Andrew Miller is, it's not a fair example to he's in the category. I think he actually carved out his own niche and people can, you know, try to live up to what he's done. And that's what we hope Chad Green can do. But certainly is he not Andrew Miller at this point? And no. He definitely doesn't have the fear in batter's eyes as Andrew Miller does. I mean, he's a disgusting left-handed pitcher too. Different type of guy.
Yeah. Yeah, Andrew Miller is the cream of the crop as far as the bullpen firemen go. But Chad Green has pitched like that, so that's all we're saying. Any last words before we get out of here?
Yeah, definitely go. Make sure you buy those tickets. Don't wait, because there is, once you purchase the tickets from the link that we post out there, you're going to get in your confirmation, you're going to get a code, and that code is going to take you to a link that's going to take you to your t-shirt. And I need you to order that t-shirt as well. It'll give you everything from our fan shop to get you the t-shirt that was included in the price. So there will be a little bit of a time frame so that we can print the shirt, mail it out to you. And so don't wait. Do not wait. Go get your tickets now. Buy them. Go to our social media accounts. You'll see the probably a pinned tweet or on Facebook or on Instagram, wherever it is. Go check them out. And definitely looking forward to hanging out and seeing more people at the event on September 30th.
Yes, let us know if you're coming. If you buy tickets, tweet us at @Andrew_Rotondi and @ScottReinen and @YankeesPodcast. Tweet us. We're looking forward to seeing everybody, and we'll talk to you guys in a few days.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.